Just repeat the whole verse here. Yajya yich, yajya yit vash vamedais tvam trivir uttama kalpakai tadyasha pavanam dikshu shata manyor ivatanot. Lord Krishna caused three well-performed Ashwamedha Yajnas to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhisthira, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. And then in the purport, we're going to see that Prabhupada is going to talk about in the performance of Ashwamedha Yajna by Maharaj Yudhisthira, performance of the Ashwamedha Yajna. And he'll also talk about the comparison that was made between Maharaj Yudhisthira and the King of Heaven. So those two topics are in the purport. But I was thinking before that, let's go back and talk a little bit about the context of this verse in terms of the other verses. And in general, at this point we've kind of come to this understanding that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the Kali Yuga is the essence of all Dharma. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, reciting it like that, spreading it, glorifying it, taking shelter of its content, is the essence of all Dharma. Yeah. And therefore, it's very natural then, before the actual content of the book is presented, there are some prefatory, and then there's a preface, there's a history of the book. You know, if it's so great, well, who's talking, who's listening, what's the purpose, under what circumstances was it produced, so all those kind of things. So that's what we're in now. We're talking about the whole history of the Bhagavatam. Yeah? And of course, everything is taking place after Yudhisthira and Bhishma and so many people have tried for so many years to avoid this conflict, civil war. But it's unavoidable. And so then after the battle is over, you know, then we're discussing that situation, and that's the environment in which Srimad Bhagavatam is being produced. So here we're talking about all this, Ashwatthama, and then after he's taken care of and offering water for departed ancestors, like that, and pacifying the intelligence with proper instructions by Krishna. Yeah. And so then, specifically, Prabhupada mentions Ashwamedha Yajna by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And of course, Gomedha, cow sacrifice, Ashwamedha. Of course, a horse is something very, very elegant. Everything has meaning. Everything has significance. Even just in general, our hands are symbolic representations of Indra. You know, so our bodies, they're not separated from the primordial archetypal aspects of the universe. You know, and they're going to function in response to that, and they're also going to, when we use them, it's also going to have an effect on the cosmic situation. So of course, horse sacrifice is something quite elegant, and going to have a very, intense, profound, aristocratic influence on the universe like that. So, Prabhupada said that this verse is the preface, more or less the preface of Maharaj Yudhisthira's Ashwamedha Yajna. But that's all he talks about. And so then I went to look it up in the Mahabharata by Krishna Dharma Das, which is there on the Vedabase, www.vedabase.com. The whole Mahabharata's there, if you didn't know it. And also Prabhu's Ramayana. So, and those are actually on the Encyclopedia Britannica. We pay $50 a year to be members of that and use it for preaching purposes. So I noticed that their entries in the Ramayana and Mahabharata, they weren't so bad, some natural mistakes. But in the links down below, there was no link to a complete edition. So I just submitted these two links, and the robot said, okay, thank you. And now I look, and they're there. So somebody who reads the Mahabharata entry on the Britannica, will find a link to the complete Bhagavatam, which will take him to thevedabase.com. And I think people consider, well, it's quite nice. And of course, while he's there, he might then start looking at other books by Prabhupada. Sankirtan Yagna Ki Jai. So, if you read that, it's actually interesting, you know. And for one thing in general is that I heard Hridayananda Maharaj make this comment that Madhvacharya comments that the Mahabharata that we have is corrupted. Some things have been added, some things have been left out, and some things are not in the right position. Now, specifically Bhagavad Gita, that appears to be, you know, completely correct. All the different additions or versions or recensions, I guess they're called, of the Mahabharata have the same Bhagavad Gita. You know? But other things, so it's a little bit. Have to be a little careful when the Mahabharata says this or that. It may not be exactly correct, but our acharyas, Madhvacharya and others, they've picked out certain stuff and certified certain things. But in general, there may be some mistakes in certain things. You know. But in general, the history there of this whole yagna is that the whole battle of Kurukshetra was finished. You know. Then after that, there's a lot of cleanup. I mean, it's like cleaning up the bodies, cleaning up this and that, you know. But also there is also cleaning up, social relations. Other devotee, Govardhan, a couple of days ago, was making that point that, you know, is it, you got to figure out, like, who's alive and who's dead, and if they're alive, what's their actual capacity and situation? What's their situation and capacity? So there's social cleanup, there's, you know, biological cleanup, and also there's a lot of cleanup for karma that these guys, you know, in the modern world, you know, we have this idea the end justifies the means or whatever, you know, but no, there's a lot of subtle reactions which have been set in place which are going to have an effect like that and so on, you know. So after all this, of course, Yudhisthira was quite concerned about, you know, things at every level and especially about this cleanup. So he was Krishna's inspiration and everything else, that he was going to do Ashvamedha sacrifice, Ashvamedha yagna, then to take care of the karmic reaction for all this. You know? So of course, along with this, then at that point, this decision is made to do the Ashvamedha yagna, but Krishna departs. He leaves from Hastinapur, and he goes back to Dwarka. And Yudhisthira implores him to come back when it's time for the Ashvamedha yagna. So then somewhere along here, after about, I guess, 8 months, probably, then Mother Uttara gives birth to Maharaj Parikshit. That's mentioned, and people are quite happy at his horoscope and his characteristics. And then it comes time to actually perform these Ashvamedha yagna. But there's no resources. Of course, we know this from the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada also mentions it. Yeah. And he tells a story that all the treasury was exhausted. It's bizarre, but it costs so much money, you know, to destroy things, to kill people. So all the treasury was exhausted, and there was no real surplus funds or anything necessary to do this yagna. Yeah. And so at that point, the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says Krishna informed, but in the Mahabharata we're looking at, it says that Vyasadeva informed Yudhisthira about Maharaj Maruta and his big sacrifice in bygone era, and everything was made of gold. Like we serve out, you know, at Rath Yatra, we serve out the feast on paper plates. So he was serving it out on golden plates like that. Yeah. And all the Prabhupada says that the Brahmanas, when they were leaving, why carry all this? My goodness, you know. But they didn't want to embarrass the king by refusing these gifts. So as they were leaving, they kind of just left it by the side of the road. Yeah. And so then all this was there in one cave. So Arjuna headed off at some point and found this and brought it back. And there were like an unlimited stream of elephants and ox carts just pulling gold, you know, gold paraphernalia. So the gold they got required for the sacrifice was there. Yeah. Then the next thing, of course, is the same as what's the one they did before? Asha made the sacrifice. Rajasuya. The Rajasuya sacrifice was the same, very similar. And the same thing had to happen. The person who's doing it had to be victorious over all directions. So Yudhisthira also released a challenge horse to go everywhere, anywhere. And anybody who tried to capture the horse or control it and wouldn't accept the authority of Maharaj Yudhisthira at Hastinapur had to be, through diplomacy or actual combat, defeated by Arjuna. And, of course, Yudhisthira instructed Arjuna to try and reduce the violence as much as possible and not to kill anybody if he could, So Arjuna went off, and of course, yeah, there were quite a few big kingdoms, powerful people, who were a lot of animosity towards Yudhisthira, and maybe they would cooperate this way or that way, but they weren't going to accept him as maybe as emperor exactly. And among these were the Trigarthas. Remember, Arjuna had a big fight with them for a long time. So I guess it was the son, or the sons of the Trigarthas who Arjuna had killed, and then they had a big fight, very ferocious fight, but Arjuna finally subdued them. And somebody else, Somadatta, of course, was killed in the fight or something, and his son died out of just anxiety, and his grandson was just a little baby. So when Arjuna came there to actually make the fight there, then the mother came out on the battlefield with a baby in her arms, and all the warriors kind of pulled up their horses and held up their arrows for a moment with this woman coming out. She went right to Arjuna and saying, "You in this battle, you killed the father and the grandfather, and now the son, he just died out of anxiety, and now please don't kill the baby also." And Arjuna threw down his arrows and started crying and cursed Duryodhana for having created this horrible event. And then the queen mother said, "Okay, please just accept Arjuna and Yudhisthira. They're good people. It was just circumstance." And so that was taken care of. Then finally he went to Manipur. And there, of course, the king of Manipur, Bahubrahan, was his son by Chitrangada, the princess of Manipur. So when Arjuna came, he tried to receive him with all respect and everything else, and Arjuna chastised him, said, "What kind of coward are you? You claim to be the head of a kingdom, but somebody approaches your kingdom with weapons drawn, and you just receive him with obeisances." And Bahubrahan tried to pacify Arjuna, but Arjuna was just pushing him for a fight, And so finally he accepted, and there was a big fight. And during the fight, he actually killed Arjuna. Yeah. So then everybody's totally distraught. Bahubrahan was going to kill himself. I killed my father. But then Ulupi shows up, the Naga princess that Arjuna also married. And she said, no, this is okay. It's okay. And she brought up a special herb that brought Arjuna back to life. And she said, this was because Arjuna killed somebody. I think it was Jayadratha. And because of that, by this kind of illegal means, by the trick, of Krishna holding his hand over the sun. And so therefore they cursed Arjuna, he would die, And so now, because he's died, that curse is no longer effective, so that's taken care of, So then Arjuna was quite happy to have such a nice heroic son, and didn't stay much at all. I think they said, "Please stay, But he said, no, you two wives, you come to Hastinapur now, everything is peaceful, and Bahubrahan, you stay here and take care of your kingdom." And he kept on going. So eventually the whole challenge horse conquered all directions, and Yudhisthira was able to have sufficient wealth. And then it describes the yagna, and all the kings of the world, they came and offering tribute, everybody received properly, and they were constructing mansions for them. And all the brahmanas came. And it was something like every time the number of brahmanas fed equaled 100,000, they would sound conch shells and blow horns and stuff like that. And it was happening, I think, like five times a day or something. They had fed another 100,000 brahmins like that. So it was quite a world event. global event. You know, everybody was conscious. And afterwards, then when it was going on, Vyasadeva says in the Mahabharata, told Yudhishthira he should do everything three times as much. He should feed three times as many Brahmins. He should offer three times as many ghee, so forth, so on. And that way, even though he did the sacrifice one time, he would get the effect of doing it three times, like that, you know. So everything was done, and when it was all over, then Yudhishthira shocked everybody by telling Vyasadeva, he said, actually, at this point, I'm, you know, Lord, undisputed Lord of the Earth, and I have it rightfully even by my karma now, everything else. I've paid off all the karmic debts to everybody. So at this point, though, I want to give the entire thing to you and the Brahmins. And Vyasadeva was so pleased and everything else, and he said, all right, it's my property. And he said, but what do I need with this? So I put it into your hands for proper administration, you know, because we are so busy with austerities and other activities that we can't do this. And so please you administer it, you know, on behalf of others. So at that point, Yudhishthira actually was happy, you know, as far as you could be with the situation the way it was. But he felt that everything was pretty much adjusted, and of course the instructions by Bhishma Dev, you know, told him this is Krishna's plan, you know, and so on. So look at things the way they are, as the way Krishna wants them, like that, so on. Yeah. And he also made Dhritarashtra, the chief executive officer. I'm not sure what title he had, but Indraprastha, of course, you know, when they first approached Dhritarashtra for their share of the kingdom, Bhishmadev told him, okay, divide it in half, because Bhishma was also trying to avoid this war. And Duryodhana was totally upset. He said, why have you done this? Why have you taken that which should be one and divided it in half? And so on, you know. So the Pandavas were given Indraprastha, which was like this place that I guess had been like somebody's capital once or something. But when they took it over, the histories show like snakes and everything else, and, you know, vines growing over collapsed things. So they changed the whole thing, and that was their capital, and then they became emperors of the world. But then as things went on, you know, of course they were exiled, so I don't know what happened to Indraprastha, how it maintained. But at this point they came back and they became, of course, the emperors of the world from Hastinapur. But Maharaj Dhritarashtra, they made him the king. They made him the ruler. They followed his advice and instructions on how to do everything. And Kunti was, and Draupadi was serving Gandhari, like servants, you know. Yeah. And it was actually in many ways, Dhritarashtra was feeling, he felt of course some loss in his own sons, but at the same time he was feeling like, you know, that he had never been served as sincerely by Duryodhana and his brothers. Of course, whatever Duryodhana and his brothers did, they did for a purpose, you know, their own purpose. So even when they were serving their own father, he could feel they had their own motivations about it. But now he was feeling that Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadeva, they were all serving him and his wife, and, you know, like sincere sons. And so he was very much pacified. But Bhima wasn't in that mood. And Bhima had a grudge, and he was very angry about the fact that Dhritarashtra was receiving this respect, and he would do things to interfere with his orders, and right in his presence he would talk tauntingly about how he killed all of these rascals and stuff like that. So he was trying to cause emotional pain to Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra didn't mention this to Yudhishthira because he also didn't want to create disturbances. But that was going on. So finally, yeah, these Ashvamedha yajnas were performed and everything is going on like that. And then the Mahabharata goes on like that. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, then we see how this all forms a part, the whole situation, how the Bhagavatam was spoken amongst these very elevated people. Very elevated people. And then we get the Bhagavatam, which is such an elevated literature, as we begin to appreciate the Sanskrit, the literature, the poetry, the philosophy, the content, the logic, the stories. and also the fact that it's transcendentally authorized. You know? And we begin to appreciate this and take shelter of it, you know, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, then we have such a great benefit. So the second part of this purport, Prabhupada talks about, actually most of purport, almost the entire purport, Prabhupada talks about the comparison of Maharaj Yudhisthira to the King of Heaven. It's very significant, he says, in the actual text, in the verse, Prabhupada picks that out. This comparison of Maharaj Yudhisthira to the King of Heaven. And Prabhupada says the King of Heaven is thousands and thousands of times greater than Maharaj Yudhisthira in opulence. Yet the fame of Maharaj Yudhisthira was not less. Like that. Look at a couple graphics here of even down in this modern world in comic books, there's the tales of Maharaj Yudhisthira brought to you by Ether Media, like that. Yeah. And here's a little picture down below of, as they say, Nakula, Bhima, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, and Sahadev on their royal thrones in their royal assembly. And if we go to the next slide, here we see the whole picture like that. This graphic, it's on the internet, it's a big file, you know. And then if you look close, the names are written by each of the kings. You see the asanas given for different rajas, and their names are written by each one like that, you know. And up above in the balcony are the ladies, the kshatrinis, looking like kshatrinis. And then some of the other people there, rishis it looks like, and so on, you know. So this was the opulence of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was like the sun and surrounded by stars and moons. And each of these people, of course, were great, powerful, intelligent, qualified people like that. And all these rishis knew everything. So Prabhupada says the reason for this fame on the level of more than Indra is that Maharaj Yudhisthira was a pure devotee of the Lord. And by his grace only, his grace, Krishna's all grace only, was King Yudhisthira on the level of the King of Heaven. Even though he, Yudhisthira, performed only 3 yajnas, whereas the King of Heaven performed hundreds. Next slide here. I guess it maybe takes a second to load, I don't know. That is the prerogative of a devotee of the Lord. The Lord is equal to everyone. But a devotee of the Lord is more glorified because he is always in touch with the All Great. The sun's rays are equally distributed, but still there are some places which are always dark. This is not due to the sun, but to the receptive power. Similarly, those who are 100% devotees of the Lord get full-fledged mercy of the Lord. Those who are 100% devotees of the Lord get full-fledged mercy of the Lord, which is always equally distributed everywhere. So very nice, very important concept in our philosophy. You know, who's the cause of our happiness? Who's the cause of our distress? Is God all-powerful? There's so many different cultures. And one thing, for example, you see like different, for example, one time one of our devotees was walking around and he met some Mormons and they gave him like a CD and we looked at it and it was well done. You could tell it took quite a bit of money to produce it. They all had like Jesus Christ type costumes and the acting was good and stuff. But they were talking about faith, you know, faith in God. And it came down to this point of blind faith, you know, which Prabhupada says is condemned. And blind faith and absurd inquiry are condemned in 434. And so they still hadn't gotten the idea worked out. You had to have a leap of faith. You had to have that blind faith there, you know. But so there are many, many subtle points what is reality? What is the higher world? How are things controlled? What are our responsibilities? Why do reactions happen? You know? Even we can look at this even within ISKCON. I mean, ISKCON is some ways very much like, you know, this the Mahabharata and different people on, you know, on 90% demons dressed as devotees, or 90% devotees with 10% demoniac attachment, you know. So all kinds of people and different kinds of reactions and activities and verbal activities. Like Mother Imala, of course, yesterday was pointing out that even to touch the hair of an actually chaste girl, insult her, you know, is bound to cause a terrible reaction. You know? Of course, these things are offensive, but beyond being offensive, also there's even just this reaction is like that. You know, it's offensive to take prasadam as a object of, you know, of stuffing in your guts to stimulate your stomach, you know, like that. Oh, you know, it's offensive. But also we can look at it in terms of just this mechanical reaction that you're going to get acid indigestion or whatever, you know. So it's a little complicated, the relationship between karma for a devotee and personal reactions in terms of offenses, you know. But we have to understand that so we can deal with it properly, you know, and then make progress to become pure devotees, to be always connected with Krishna, like that. Next slide. Again, Prabhupada says, this is not due to the sun, but to the receptive power. So if you, that, so if you look up the purports, somehow or other, what is it? Yayatam mam prapajante. Yeah. Yayatam mam prapajante. Tams tataiva bhajami aham mamavart anuvartante manushya parta sarvasaha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. So of course this is the basic idea, like that, basic verse. And then the purport probably basically talks about people who are karmis. They approach Krishna for their fruity results, you know, or they approach different agencies of Krishna, different manifestations. Then he talks about those who approach Krishna for Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and finally Bhagavan, you know. And he doesn't go much beyond that in the purport, you know, in this Bhagavad Gita purport like that, you know. So, but, you know, Krishna is also present, right, as now as Lord Chaitanya, and that's the access we have. We have access to Jehovah, we have access to Allah, yeah, and different manifestations, but through Lord Chaitanya, you know, by giving us Chaitanya Charitamrita and a Parampara, you know, then Adilila 1:4, right in the very beginning, it says, may the Supreme Lord, who is known as the Son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart. Thank you, Krishna Das Kaviraj, for asking this. May he be situated in the innermost chambers of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of molten gold. He has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. Jai Shishi Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki. So our graphics there on the left and the bottom is, you know, Lord Chaitanya showing his Brahman effulgence and converting all the Mayavadi sannyasis headed by Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi. And above is Lord Chaitanya at Rath Yatra, and different people seeing him in different ways. Of course, there he was in the mood, in this mood of Radharani, and very intense, you know. And some people were appreciating this. The foam was coming from his mouth, and those who were expert were picking it up and eating it. So I guess it's kind of like cotton candy or something. Something unbelievable, you know. So how to advance, how to take advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because, okay, somebody, it says that anybody who pays his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya, simply thinking him to be a proper sannyasi, his material distresses will diminish, and eventually he'll get liberation. So I always remember one time we were in Peru when I was first going there, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago or something like that. And our temple is outside of Lima, about maybe 30 kilometers outside of Lima, which is always, you know, cloudy and everything else. And there's a kind of a resort area called Chosica. It's a town, and a lot of clubs there and stuff, weekend clubs, and it's sunny, and, you know, weekend houses. So the devotees got a nice property there, and they developed it. And they had a gurukula. And so then there was this invitation to all the primary schools to participate in some parade on one day, you know. And so we arrived at the very end like that. And maybe like, I don't know, maybe like 40 different primary schools or something, you know. And it was going down to a central part of the town, a little bit down below. And everybody was on top of the buildings and the windows. It was a big, like, you know, country festival fair. So we were at the very end, and the sun was going down behind us. And they had very nice gurantaitis from Navadweep, about, you know, about 4 feet tall with their hands raised. And they had them on a cart up behind the whole procession. And all the gurukula kids, maybe about 100, were in three rows, pulling three ropes, and teachers in front, you know. And so then I asked the teachers, do they know the Gaura Artik song? And they said, yes, of course, you know. So why don't you start chanting it? I said, okay, you know. So they started chanting Jaya Jaya Gaura Chandra. And of course it was very cute, little kids chanting and Jaya Jaya Gaura Chandra Awajikadoba, and dancing like little Peruvian kids, like, you know. So all the people, their hearts were melting. Oh, this is the Hare Krishna. They're okay, you know. And then one man came up next to me, a local man, and he said, who are they? You know, pointing to the statues of Gurnatai. And I said, oh, they are Indian saints. And he paid his obeisances. He's right here, just spontaneously bowed down and, you know, touched his head to the ground like that and so on, you know. So I always remember that. Like, what's happened? That means his material distresses will diminish. Eventually he'll get liberation, you know. So different people are getting different things from Lord Chaitanya's movement, right? Yeah. Some of us are getting good food and, you know, and the best. Jayananda said, ISKCON means eating and sleeping in the best of company. Eating and sleeping in the best of company. You know? So yeah, different people get different things, my gosh, you know. But it's always, we always have to remind each other, I mean, maybe at least please remind me, that, you know, what to speak of actually getting. You know, we can go to Indraloka. I've heard Prabhupada said that most of the people he was initiating were not going to go back to Godhead. They don't. Most of the people haven't followed strictly, you know. And so maybe the first result is they're going to go to. I heard Prabhupada said they're going to go to Indraloka, you know. And hopefully they'll have an ISKCON there. You know, join the ISKCON Indraloka, and we can finish it off, you know. So where are we going to go? Are we going to go to Indraloka? Are we going to go to Maharloka and enjoy, you know, Bhagavatam classes and intellectual experience and the philosophy? Or are we actually going to really get free from this selfish motivation? You know? And as I go on in different circumstances, boy, I can see, you know, I'm attached, you know, to different kinds of gratification. And they could expand, you know, if I'm not careful. If I'm not careful, you know, my attachment to eating and sleeping in the best of company could very easily expand into, you know, to what's the word? Damaging levels like that. Destroy my ashram, you know, destroy my sadhana. So you've got to be careful, and to got to then surrender. Oh my gosh, you know, somebody has to give up meat eating or give up a list of sex to join an ISKCON. Big surrender, you know. But then we have to do things which are just as difficult for us in terms of giving up pride, giving up enjoying prasad, giving up breathing. You know? After you give up breathing, then you've got to give up the mind. You know? So, and hopefully, my goodness, all the way to getting love of Krishna in the mood of the gopis, and in the mood of Radharani. In the mood of Radharani and separation from Krishna. Oh my gosh, you know? Okay, got to keep reminding each other and, you know, pushing each other, and to do this yagna, yeah, we call it Sankirtan yagna, to make the world auspicious, to get people to understand God, you know, to get liberation for everybody. But ultimately, the Sankirtan yagna, the whole thing is to get the mercy of Prabhupada, to get the mercy of the representatives of Lord Chaitanya. And what is it? The Prabhupada is an evil guy? No, it's the same thing. His mercy is there for everybody. Somebody who's very simple and this and that, or somebody who's very sophisticated, his mercy is there, and we really have to try and just take advantage of it like that. Okay, next slide here. I have your Prabhupada. There he is on Sankirtan. Yeah. And yes, yeah, some people, they're gregarious. They came from a family where they're used to fighting with their brothers and sisters, and they go out in the street and it's one big family for them. And somebody else, they can't do that, but they can join the Harinam party and sing, and maybe, you know, they can do that better than somebody else who does book distribution. Yeah? And somebody else can write the books. In the lower left-hand corner, we have www.iskoneducation.org. And this is the Ministry of Educational Development with Sesha Das. And we're trying to develop this educational work. It's a very good opportunity coming now. I've mentioned this before. And to actually start establishing, primary schools, which can be right in, actually preschool, primary school, secondary, on the same level as the Waldorf schools or the Montessori schools. Economically practical, good spiritual content, something appreciable by a broader range than just devotees, but with full range that devotees and the devotee kids can get all the top education they need. And we have electives for the Prahlad Maharajas, and have, you know, electives for the Hiranyakasipus. So everybody, you know, can get basic education, and then beyond that, you know, more specific. So it's really developing, and we're actually working on this in Texas now, the first place in America. And if, as it works out there, then we'll be able to, you know, duplicate it and stuff. So I think everybody just try. Everybody's been trying, no? My next slide here. We have a picture of Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON there. Srila Prabhupada's. Maybe you can look at the picture and pick out which of the four types of dogs you are. Prabhupada said even a dog can take part and dance in ecstasy. So we got big dogs. We got little dogs. We got French dogs. Maybe you can find out what kind of dog you are, like that. I got GBC dogs, you know, mother of five kid dogs, you know. But up in the corner, what do you see up there? There's one dog looking over the fence who couldn't join the parade because he didn't get his rounds done, didn't get up in the morning, and so doesn't have the sink. He can't take advantage of the mercy of the Sankirtan movement to participate, to join the parade, to dance, you know. To Sankirtan, what do you got to do? You don't have to do much of anything. All you got to be able to do is just, you know, do what the clown tells you to do, Srila Prabhupada tells you to do, just like a dog, you know. And then we go out in the Harinam, we figure out how to put tilak on, a dhoti or a sari, and go out and chant this mantra with other people. And it has so much effect, you know. And then gradually we become more qualified, you know. But the thing is, yeah, unless we do the sadhana bhakti of Lord Chaitanya, you know, then we can't get, we have to stay on the porch. We have to stay in the yard. We're not qualified to join the, you know, the Sankirtan movement in that sense. So first thing, become purified, chant Hare Krishna. And we become purified, then go out and expect Krishna to send innocent people. One, two. We remain purified. Two, Krishna sends innocent people. Three, and they have to be patient, you know, to listen to what is this material world. That's the basic thing. Who are we? What is the material world? Not that we have to, you know, give a pound of blood for every person we meet. Maybe an ounce or something like that, or something, you know. But no, from their side too, and at a certain point, if people aren't responding and this and that, then we leave them to the mercy of the super soul and Durga Devi, like that. Yeah. So it's kind of our comprehension of the verse here. Back in the beginning here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. There we go. Shift F5. Yeah. Yeah. Yaja yich ashva medaistam tribir uttama kaupakai tad yashapavanam dikshu Shatamanya Ivatam, a note. Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Ashvamedha Yajnas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhisthira, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 sacrifices. So any questions, comments, complaints?
I don't think there'll be complaints. I've unmuted everybody already. Everyone's so good. They're quiet. Quite a few devotees over on Skype and on Start Meeting. So if anyone has any questions or comments, can I just ask one really, really quick one?
Please.
I heard you say that we have to give up everything and join prasadam, and then you said even give up breathing. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, Prabhupada says we have to give up life breathing. Yeah. He says our breathing is colored with a material color like that. You know? And so when we die, obviously the prana, we lose the texture, we lose the color, we lose the prana. You know? And the prana, depending on our attachment, maybe we hang on to it, so it takes us around certain levels. Or maybe if we're more detached, then we're off the level of air. And then after that, above texture, is a level of space. What to speak of giving up being attached to breathing, we have to give up being attached to occupying space. Imagine that one. Yeah. And after we give up being attached to occupying space, then we have just the level of our personality, our thoughts, our ambitions, our hopes, our memories, my. Yeah. Which, of course, during japa, we like to think about this, think about that, think about this, think about that. Yeah, but we have to give all that up. Yeah, and so on. Yeah. If Krishna wants us to use it, okay, but it's not mine anymore. It's not my prana. It's not my eyes. Not my fire. It's not my earth. My sense of smell. Now it all belongs to Krishna, and I'm using it for Krishna, and I'm very ecstatic. But it's just Krishna's. You know, any moment, you know, like that. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Just one question regarding this Arjuna incident. If he died and then by some herb he got his life back, doesn't that strengthen the conception that body is just made of chemicals?
Doesn't that suspend the concept, you said, or?
Yeah, doesn't that support the concept that body is made of chemicals?
Chemicals. what are chemicals? You know, chemicals are, you know, quantum mechanical entities and all that kind of stuff. What is material nature, so on. You know. So we accept that the body is made of five gross elements, and three subtle elements. Like that, you know, but and those can be connected to Krishna, or they can be indirectly. They can directly be connected to Krishna or indirectly, Vina, Prakriti, Ashada. But beyond that, the body is also composed of karma. Just like the fan, I'm running the fan now, but the fan is composed of electricity. It's not just composed of wires. You know, a fan. It has to be composed of wires and electricity, composed of that. So same way too, Arjuna's body is composed of the gross elements, and it's also, like everybody's body, composed of certain karma. And that karma had been included dying from being cursed. So by making this thing, the karma then had been adjusted like that, so he didn't have to die again because of that curse. Yeah. And so the jewel was able to take care of the gross aspect and regenerate the body, so on. And of course, this is very subtle medical science. Now we're talking about stem cells and this and that. You know, even for example, I know if you're cutting somebody up and you want some vein, you can just reattach it with little clips, and it will still be leaking here and there, but the body, the platelets and everything else, it's just designed to grab onto itself and then reconnect. You know, so there's things even like that with certain herbs and jewels, and allow the body just to regenerate according to its subtle aspect, its subtle karma, like that.
So generally, it's like the soul leaves the body. So in this Arjuna's case, the soul does not leave the body; it waits for his head to be reunited.
Yeah. Actually, it was a chest wound. I think it was a chest wound. Many times, of course, we have near-death experiences where people are medically dead. They're brain dead, respiration stopped, and everything else. And they are medically dead. But then they come back and they have this whole experience of being out of the body, you know, being someplace else, like that, and experiencing things they could not have experienced. You know, so even right now, the soul can be within range and may come back in on its own accord.
Okay, thank you very much.
Are you planning on committing suicide or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go to Goloka.
Do you see the chat, Maharaj?
Let me see here. I got to open it up. I got to go my little arrow and push the button. The arrow pops out. And I push the chat. And it says, Bhakta Luciano, do you have mic? Max says. Luciano says, no. Sorry. That's the whole thing, or?
It's a little above that.
Oh, it says, okay. Going above that, Luciano says, Hare Krishna, quick question. To receive benefits of Sankirtan movement, must we be fixed in our rounds? And again, no. Yayatam mam prapajante. Like the example I gave, that man in Peru, just by paying his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya because he accepted him as a saint, then the injunction is he's going to get liberation. So just by coming in contact with the Sankirtan movement, people can get liberation. Yeah. But if you want to get inspiration from the Super Soul, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvakam, then you have to be an initiated devotee. Like that, so on. And if on and on like that. So we have to be more connected to the movement practically, and then more and more subtly, you know, to get more benefits. Like that. The fan has to be plugged in, right? You know, to get the electricity. You know?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my invitation.
Oh, Hare Krishna.
I just wanted to ask you, what all those universes that is in all the planets in material universes, is this just manifestation, external manifestation of our internal consciousness in a way that exactly what our consciousness is, that's where we're going to go. Is that right?
Well, of course, you know, Mahavishnu, he lies down on the causal ocean, Viraj River. Then, of course, like everybody, he's perspiring. Little drops are coming out of perspiration, are coming out of his pores. And also out of his breathing, also there's little drops. And each of those, of course, is a universe. So that they are being produced from him, you know. And so, you know, and Prabhupada says that, you know, Krishna himself, let's see. If there were no jivas with separatist desires, then maybe there would be no material world. You know, just because we have these separatist desires, then Krishna creates this place where we can get reformed, like that. You know, if there was no crazy people, then there would be no mental hospitals. Okay, you know. But it's explained that Krishna himself also, you know, likes some of these pastimes. Krishna can't perform Bhoma Lila in the spiritual world. He can't like rip Hiranyakasipu's, you know, stomach open and toss, you know, bloody guts all over Vaikuntha, like that. You know, there can be pictures like that, but he can't do it exactly. You know, so he himself likes it, and he says he every now and again he doesn't wash his club after he smashes some demon. lets the blood dry on there, and every now and again he kind of turns his club around and looks at it and, you know, remembers, ah, that was a good fight, you know. And so I guess, you know, Jai and Vijay, of course, fell down because he wanted a good fight, you know. So if there were no conditioned souls who wanted to be in Maya, would Krishna still create the material world just to have, you know, to satisfy this lower consciousness or something, you know? It'd be Krishna himself within Krishna. There's a little bit of this desire to satisfy this lower consciousness. So in that aspect, the material world is, you know, okay, it's spiritual. But maybe not, you know. But the fact is that there's always going to be some people who turn away. So in that respect, yeah, the universes are created by our desires. So Krishna creates them so we can purify ourselves and all the universes because of our karma and desires. But simultaneously, he's also entering into them and enjoying them to some degree himself. So also just being created to some degree, you know, also for his satisfaction too. But mostly the basic principle is, yeah, is just the material world is being created so that we can express our karma and become purified.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else?
Everybody's ready to go on Sankirtan?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, that was such a good class. I mean, there were just so many great points in it, but I wanted to tell a quick story about a friend of mine who was leaving her body. She was struggling to breathe at the last second, and a friend of hers leaned over and said in her ear, "You don't have to breathe anymore." It was like she had forgotten. And a smile came over her face. No, her friend said, "You don't have to breathe anymore. Take Srila Prabhupada's hand." And a smile came over her face, and that was it. She left her body. But she had to be reminded there at the very end that she didn't have to breathe anymore.
Yeah, I've heard other stories the same thing. You know, when Mataji, she was, you know, sinking and gasping and coming back. And then finally her husband said, "Just don't hang on. And she nodded, and next time she, you know, let go of it. You know, because, you know, we're attached to smoking, we're attached to drinking, we're attached to gratification of our lower, you know, animal activities. We give it up. We let our prana come up to the stomach, okay, then we let it come up to the heart, you know. But then after that, yeah, they can say after giving up the prana is giving up space. That's more subtle. I mean, again, we all like to occupy space. Yeah. We don't even think about it. You know? Yeah. But then when you start going through this chanting and everything else, and Krishna gives you a good fever or gives you something like that, then you begin to realize, you know. And hopefully we're getting the highest thing, you know, right along with that. We're just getting a very, very high experience of Radha and Krishna and these things and Goloka, you know, Sankirtan. And so it's not that we have to just go through it like, you know, one step up at a time. We do that, but simultaneously we're getting more and more connected right at the very top. You know, it's a sublime movement. It goes from the growth stage to the top stage all in one jump. You know, all expense free paid weekend in Vaikuntha. But then you gotta come back again to Indraloka. Yeah, but you don't forget that expense paid weekend. That's where I want to go. Yeah.
Mars, there is. Oh, on Skype you don't see this. Jai Shiva Prabhupada, Jai Shiva Mani. Thanks, Guru Maharaj, please come on here. Your holy loaded feet, all voice and soul parties. Rusty Manjari Baby.
Okay. Oh, okay. No, no question or comment. All right. Same to her. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj?
Yes, sir. Mr. Horsch.
Yeah. Regarding this prana thing which you said from stomach to heart, can that be realized in our growth conditions? Of course.
You know, maybe like you wake up in the morning and you're chanting your rounds and you can just feel it. You know, the prana. To put it in a gross sense, your brains are in your butt. You know, you feel so, you know, gross headed, and you start breathing and shaking your head and sitting up properly, and you can just feel the prana coming up and out of your lower part of your body, and now it's kind of hanging out around your stomach, and you're thinking about about throwing up and vomiting, or about eating something you want to eat, or you know. And then, okay, you keep chanting, and you can actually feel it rising up, and you don't eat too much. You know, you can eat to the point where you start to push the stomach, to stretch it, to Prabhupada says that one has to gratify the senses without arousing them. So you eat without arousing the stomach. You know, okay, it's eating it, but I could arouse it, and that would make me happy, because I would get some rasa, I'd get some taste from arousing my stomach. Okay, don't arouse it. And when it's not aroused, okay, it's the nutrition's gone there, and kind of technically I can tell that's enough. I'm hungry, but within 15 minutes I won't be hungry, you know. And also I've eaten them out, I can digest properly, and I have a lot of energy for service. So now then it starts being up higher, and if you're fasting on a codicil and these kind of things, you can see it happening, you know. And your mind thinks about your stomach, but you're not going to eat. Your mind thinks about your stomach, but you're not going to eat. Your mind gives up on that. It starts to think about the prayers by the personified Vedas and you know, this kind of stuff. So we practice this, you know, it happens automatically, but we can also consciously, you know, make the effort and stuff to chant and dance and, you know, raise the prana. And when it's raised up, the thing is in achahara, we actually withdraw it. You know, we do all these things from Ashtanga Yoga. When you're chanting and dancing very, very nicely, the kirtan, it goes right inside, and it starts to come from the heart. You're chanting with an open throat and playing the kartals right from your heart and chanting and dancing, and you know, big kirtan. That's pratyahara. You know, you're coming, as you've withdrawn the prana to the heart, to yourself, right from you, like that, you know, so on. So that's why the Bhagavatam describes these things. In the first canto, second canto, it just describes them one after another, but always in terms of, you know, the basic process of bhakti yoga.
Maharaj, I wanted to say earlier, it was too noisy where I was. It was a little comment when the Prabhu asked the question about how is it possible that Arjuna was killed, he died, but yet an herb brought him back. And I'm just kind of remembering in Bhagavad Gita, I think in the 9th chapter or something, Krishna says, "Aham aushadam," that I am the medicinal herb.
Yeah.
So that's Krishna. I mean, certainly Krishna created us. Krishna can certainly bring us back to life again.
Yeah. I mean, you get your arm cut off, and even now surgeons, they can do enough stuff to put it back so it'll grow back on and function.
Yeah.
And as in the story in the Mahabharata, Krishna Dharma's Mahabharata, it says it was a chest wound, and Shalupi used a jewel like that. I think it was a jewel. It wasn't an herb, I think. I'm pretty sure. No. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, yeah. So I guess that we'll go ahead here then. It's 12:42, and here in beautiful downtown Murfreesboro, Tennessee, on Medical Parkway Drive. Yeah, and we're doing pretty well. It's the first time in my whole devotional career, pretty much, I've been in one place, you know, and we're getting situated here and trying to get more relation with our local scholars, everything else, and also developing these Ministry of Education programs. So please go to that webpage, iskoneducation.org. We're improving the webpage. It needs a lot of work. And so if you have that inclination or that's part of your sankirtan, then really get involved in this educational development, homeschooling, all this kind of stuff. A lot of work needs to be done. There's so much happening in ISKCON that basically we need just to do an inventory, you know, because there's so much redundancy and so many different things being happening. And so our education alone is, Rupa Nuga told us that Prabhupada said, when will my sannyasis become like these Christian fathers and dedicate their lives to teaching children. So perfectly bona fide sannyas dharma is simply to teach, you know, children like that and so on. You know? Yeah. So that's our one thing we're doing in the Sankirtan. And other than that, we're trying to do some specific writing, and then there we're reading Carl Jung, and we just finished off the Tavistock, T-A-V-I, stock lectures. They're very readable, very interesting, and Prabhupada said of all the Western philosophers, he seemed to have the most intelligence. So as you begin to read him and stuff, you see how we can use him to explain the ideas to these people in the West. Because he's not a major psychiatric figure, but quite prominent. There's a lot of people, you know, who are using his ideas and perspective. And you see he had very, you know, Vedic perspective. He even was in Calcutta. He was in Calcutta when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was there. So many things. So we're doing that, and hopefully we'll get some, actually do some real serious writing on that and so on. That's our Sankirtan. So thank you very much. All going to the Prabhupada.
Hi. Thank you very much. Haribol.
Thank you. Haribol.
To mention to everybody, because Maharaj gives class every week on Friday, he's been very kind to us. Next week, Friday, he's not going to be giving class because we have a seminar, 3-day seminar, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday by Mahatma Prabhu. So I'll send out a mailer that will explain more about that, but we'll see everybody here soon. Thank you very much, Prabhus, and all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.